21 months have passed since Michael Jordan last played competitive basketball. For 21 months, the NBA was without its supreme artist. There may be many interesting peripheral aspects to both his departure and return, but at the heart of it is simply this. The best in the world is back. And in a sports world darkened by constant talk of money, strikes, and lockouts, here's a shining reminder of why we're drawn to sports in the first place. The drama, the anticipation, the sheer beauty of the moment. Today, an artist returns to his true canvas, the hardboard courts of the NBA. Michael Jordan is back.
And you are in Australia right now.
You're talking NBA basketball. You're talking great teams. You're talking great individual players.
Takes it off and there's number 23. And of course, Johnny goes nuts.
We're all getting goosebumps thinking about it now.
I just tried to go out there and play my game.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Adam. I don't like anybody. I'm not a people person.
Grant, you made the pass. Yes. Christian, can you catch the ball? Yes.
All the stars were aligned and all the muscles fired at the right time. And I was able to get off the ground and throw one down.
I was saving that as a surprise for you.
And now, introducing your host for In All Airness, Adam Ryan.
Welcome to episode 94. Thanks for joining me. Today, a great mate of mine, Aaron Steen, joined me to discuss Michael Jordan's 1995 comeback game at Indiana. We discuss the circumstances behind MJ's return, uncover great tidbits that preceded this much-hyped matchup, and of course, offer an in-depth recap of the game itself. We chat about MJ's post-game presser too. In the podcast archives, you'll find numerous guest episodes that add even deeper context to this conversation. Bill Wennington, Luke Longley and Corey Blunt played for the Bulls in this game. Legendary reporter Peter Vesey and the great Mr. Stats, Elliot Kelb, were part of the NBA on NBC broadcast. Chicago broadcasting veteran Cheryl Ray Stout, who first broke the news of Jordan's comeback in 1995, is also a previous guest. Last but not least, Mary Kay Riscosi, who worked in media relations for the Pacers, also recently appeared on the show and shared her memories of the 24 hours of hysteria that led up to the tip-off at Market Square Arena. Towards the end of the episode, I'll share another great podcast review. You can add yours by visiting inallairness.com/review. Show notes for this episode, including links to numerous topics covered, will be available at inallairness.com/94. Now, onto the show. Thanks again for joining me, Aaron, and being a part of the show, mate. How are you today?
Adam, I'm very excited to talk about the topic that we're going to expand on today. But Adam, I'm more excited that this now applies. And so on and so forth.
NBA on NBC is back in full force, mate, with this episode.
As they all usually are, this episode is very much a friend of the show extravaganza.
Absolutely. Check out the podcast archive history, scroll through the episodes there, and you can pick and choose some great conversations, if I don't say so myself, that do add even further context to our chat today. Today, we're going to be breaking down, perhaps in minute detail, can't confirm nor deny that, the comeback of Michael Jordan, 1995. We'll get to that shortly, mate, but quickly, just a brief timeline of events that set the scene for what we'll be chatting about today. A quick side note, Michael Jordan's desire to play professional baseball warrants its own podcast episode, so therefore we'll stick solely to basketball today. Returning back to June 20th, 1993, the Chicago Bulls defeated the Phoenix Suns in Game 6 of the 93 NBA Finals. On August the 3rd of 93, the body of James Jordan was found. He wasn't identified until 10 days later, and authorities determined that he was murdered on July 23. So obviously a very somber, tragic note there in the history of the Jordan family. That in large part led to October the 6th of 93, where Jordan shocked the world by announcing his retirement from the NBA. Fast forward through to September the 9th of 1994. Jordan returned for one night only to score 52 points in Scottie Pippen's All-Star Classic, which was also dubbed Chicago Stadium's last hurrah. And MJ famously knelt and kissed the Bulls logo at center court before exiting the basketball spotlight forever. or at least so we thought. November the 1st of 94, at the new United Center, the Bulls retired MJ's number 23 in a made-for-TV special. And then we get to March of 1995, mate, and speculation of Jordan's return began in earnest on March the 9th, as far as I can tell. That was after 3 days where MJ made appearances at the Birdo Center. At that stage was the Bulls training facility. From March 10 through 17, when speculation was rife about a possible comeback, the Bulls went 4-1. Here's a really great tidbit that I came across in a March 18 article from the Indianapolis News. MJ's agent, David Falk, changed his outgoing voicemail message to this, quote, "Due to the heavy volume of calls we are receiving regarding Michael Jordan's career, we are unable to address your call personally at this time," end quote.
That's a ripper tidbit. I wasn't aware of that.
That same day, as it happened, on March 18 of 95, the following statement was released by Michael Jordan through his personal attorney and business manager, the aforementioned David B. Falk, chairman of Falk Associates Management Enterprises Incorporated, aka FAME, which is one of the greatest acronyms of all time, located in Washington, D.C., and in response to questions about his future career plans, "I'm back." One of the most famous, if not the most famous, press release slash facts of all time. So that gets us to the day in question, mate. It's Sunday, March 19th of 1995, Chicago Bulls at Indiana Pacers. It was at Market Square Arena in Indianapolis, Indiana, and in front of a crowd of 16,694. And according to the Chicago Tribune, the Market Square Arena capacity was listed at 16,530.
Wow.
They were in there like sardines at Market Square Arena.
And you mentioned that the crowd was listed at about 150 more than what its listed capacity was. This game was actually a sellout a couple of weeks before this game happened. So I'd love to know if they were able to squeeze in a few extra late people.
It's a fascinating scenario they were presented with. And in such a short amount of time to get the game organized from a standard inverted commas regular season game to something that rivaled an NBA Finals game, to be honest, the way it was hyped, it was incredible. Now, a quick scheduling note in terms of NBC's plans to air the game in question. They actually had originally planned to air two games, Sunday, March 19th, in a split national telecast. 53% of the nation was set to see the Bulls at Pacers, and the other 47% were to watch the Utah Jazz at Charlotte Hornets game. As soon as news of MJ's return was confirmed, NBC dramatically changed those plans, and only the NBC affiliates in Salt Lake City and Charlotte chose to air the Jazz at Hornets game.
Wow.
So therefore, 98% of the country saw Bulls at Pacers, and that information has come from the Chicago Tribune, but it was also scattered in numerous newspapers of the following day too.
And it's also an unconfirmed report that 98% of those people in Charlotte and Salt Lake who had to watch Jazz at Hornets actually wanted to watch Bulls at Pacers.
Yeah, it's a bit of a conundrum for those that ended up actually either being at the game, knowing that the Jordan return was happening, or that a majority of the country was seeing a game that they wouldn't. As far as the NBC telecast goes, I learned a really interesting tidbit, and it's going to be a tidbit central as well. The standard commentators for this game in 1995 were Marv Albert and Matt Gukas for NBC. I learned via the Chicago Tribune also that Bob Costas was added to the telecast crew late the night before, quote, "to capture the big game atmosphere," end quote, said an NBC spokesman. I knew he was obviously part of the telecast, but Bob Costas was flown in to then be the anchor for the actual telecast the following day. So some fantastic stuff. And on top of that, Hannah Storm was to actually solo from the network's New York studio because no pregame show was scheduled. Plenty of things going on there as NBC adjusted to the return of MJ.
We usually make the habit of not reading each other's notes before we record episodes, just so I guess we can learn new bits and pieces ourselves during an episode. And this is another great example. All of the stuff regarding NBC and how they changed all their plans and flew Bob Costas in late to lead the broadcast, just absolute gems that I had no idea happened.
Yeah, some fantastic machinations behind the scenes. Have a listen to this for a tidbit. On this same day that this game was played, Dennis Rodman separated his right shoulder in a motorbike accident and missed numerous games for San Antonio, and he played 20 games for the remainder of his San Antonio career to close out that 1995 season before, of course, in October of 95, 7 months later, becoming a Chicago Bull.
I guess it's regarded as a pretty lopsided trade, the one that sent Purdue to San Antonio for Rodman, but there's a stat coming up a bit later on in the game which Matty Gukas highlights that I think kind of paints a picture as to Will Purdue's effectiveness on this Bulls team. So,
Okay, look forward to hearing it. Now, for the Bulls and Pacers, the Bulls were coached by, of course, Phil Jackson, the Zen Master, and Larry Brown was at the helm of the Indiana Pacers at this stage. According to various newspapers, NBC telecast commenced at midday on Sunday the 19th, and entering the game, the Pacers' record was 39-24, and the Bulls were six games behind at 34-31.
What time locally did the game start?
I'm thinking 12:30. In the intro, they showed Jordan warming up a good 3 hours plus ahead of the game, and it said it was 8:44 a.m. The telecast began at midday.
The NBC intro to the game included a bite from MJ's retirement speech in 1993 of him speaking about returning to the game, possibly being a challenge that he might be looking at down the track.
The word retire means you can do anything you want from this day on. So if I desire to come back and play again, maybe that's what I want to do. Maybe that's the challenge that I may need someday down the road.
How prescient those words were.
Bob Costa said in the pregame that it was unprecedented for a team sports star to return after retiring at their peak.
Also worth noting as well, mate, that Costas is sitting alongside Marv Albert pregame here. Also unprecedented in the fact that the two big guns of NBC at that time were sided up against one another to discuss the momentous occasion that we're about to witness.
The aforementioned Marv mentioned that a problem for the Bulls at this stage was a lack of a legitimate power forward, resulting in the Bulls having troubles, and I quote, retrieving the basketball, which I really enjoyed. I love this line from Marv, and it would prove to be prophetic in this game against the Pacers as well.
Absolutely. It's quite amusing that given the amount of tall timber that the Bulls did feature, that basically the entire front line was just written off as an afterthought.
Bob Costas added that Jordan had said he would not be speaking to the media until after the game. It was his good friend and NBA on NBC sideline reporter Ahmad Rashad that had spent the previous 24 hours with Jordan, who had some tidbits for us.
Didn't he ever?
Great tidbits. Jordan said he had been enjoying watching the erroneous reports about where Jordan might be and what he was doing the night before the game. Jordan had told Ahmad that he was nervous and got to Market Square Arena at 8:30 in the morning of the game to get some shots up and burn off some of the nervous energy. Ahmad then added that Jordan will start the game and would not be wearing number 23, but number 45. He then added the understatement of 1995 in calling this bombshell a tidbit. What a tidbit.
This is what is just fascinating about this game and the entire hoopla surrounding it, because the March 19 edition of the Baltimore Sun suggested that a CBS affiliate called KMGH TV, obviously very well known, they reported the day prior that Jordan would A, not start the game at Indiana, and B, he would wear number 45, his baseball number, and not his famous number 23.
Really?
What do you make of that, given that Ahmad, you would think, would have had to have had the inside stuff from Jordan, dare I say, and yet a newspaper in Maryland has tipped off the fact he might be wearing 45, yet they said he wouldn't start the game.
My early feeling would be that, especially with a source such as good friend Ahmad Rashad, that they might have been just throwing darts at a dartboard with a blindfold on to get the fact that he was going to be wearing number 45. He also started the game, so...
Good point.
I tell you what, if they actually knew... I'd love to know how they found out, but if they didn't know, it's a pretty good guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So according to the newspaper report, Jordan and Ahmad, they flew in at 8:30 on Jordan's private plane, and then at 8:44, as per the NBC clip, he's already there on the Market Square Arena floor warming up.
8:44, they've just flown in on his private jet. Awesome. Whilst friend of the show Peter Vesey was speaking on court in the pregame, the volume of the crowd went through the roof as the Bulls exited the locker room onto the Market Square Arena floor.
This was incredible to watch. Vesey, he did remarkably well to remain composed. As you watch him talking to the camera, he's covering one of his ears and the crowd are going absolutely burlesque at this stage. The day before this game, there was another NBC clip where he said something quite amusing. And then I read a Bulls statement that was issued ahead of this particular game, which I found hilarious. So the two work in concert very well. The Bulls issued this statement from Deerfield, Illinois. The statement released by the Chicago Bulls yesterday on Michael Jordan's return. Quote, Michael Jordan today informed the Chicago Bulls that he is ending his retirement from professional basketball. He will make his return to the Bulls lineup tomorrow when the Bulls face the Indiana Pacers. In a related move, the Bulls have placed Dickie Simpkins on the injured list with tendonitis in the right Achilles tendon. End quote. I then saw a clip of Vessi later that same day. Have a listen to this.
Was anybody cut to make room for Jordan on the roster?
Yeah, I saw Dickie Simpkins limping after last night's game, and he was placed on injured reserve today.
There's a pretty good chance that if Dickie hadn't have had that tendonitis, that MJ wouldn't have played.
That's right. He would have been forced to wait a bit longer. Maybe Simpkins had a Dickie knee.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Flawless.
For those unfamiliar with Dickie knee, he's a fictitious character on a classic television show here in Australia called Hey Hey, It's Saturday. So perhaps if you have a moment, Google Hey Hey, It's Saturday, Dickie Knee. Different spelling, D-I-C-K-I-E, as opposed to Dickie with D-I-C-K-E-Y. Dickie Knee, and he's a little character on a stick, basically, that you never saw his face. Funny stuff. Hello to Daryl Summers, if you're listening.
NBC then got a comment from each of Del Curry, Hakeem Olajuwon, David Robinson, Charles Barkley, Pacers coach Larry Brown, Charles Smith of the Knicks, Pat Riley, Doc Rivers, and Hersey Hawkins. Of Pat Riley's comment, Costa said that he was, and I quote, dealing in understatement in saying it'll make things interesting. Interesting.
And that's a word that I really try and avoid. Interesting. You know, that's really interesting. But I'll probably end up saying it another 10 times.
The broadcast then went to Marv and Matty Gukas down on the floor. Marv added that the Pacers found out about Jordan's return for the Sunday afternoon NBC game during practice the previous day at a local high school. I asked former Pacer ball boy John Boland for some more info, and he was able to tell me that the team practiced at Brebeuf High School in Indianapolis.
Wow, there you go. That's some extra research there for you, mate. Well done. Hello to John Boland, if you're listening. I'm sure he is, JB. Great tidbit there, mate. Thanks, JB, for stepping up there.
Had to find out as soon as they mentioned a Indiana high school. I'm like, now, which high school would it have been?
Now that you mention that, I'm pretty sure that Mary Kay, when I had her on the show, going back a couple of months now, and do check the archives of the podcast for that, she did mention that it was a practice away from Market Square Arena when the news came through. So that makes perfect sense, matching that up. Yeah.
Matt Gukas added at this point of the season that Indiana were finally healthy after having both Davis boys return from injury, sitting at the top of the Central Division. However, Jordan's return has the capability to affect them emotionally, and they will have to do whatever they can to treat this as just another game. This coming from Matt Gukas, who I think at one point in time during the broadcast compared this to an NBA Finals atmosphere.
I tell you what, I don't want to preempt anything you might be saying, but just before tip-off, Matt Gukas got really excited, and I was absolutely pumped.
Yeah.
I was about to blow a gasket myself, mate. Pretty awesome stuff. Phil Jackson sat down with Marv Albert the morning of the game, and he told Marv that he'll aim to play Jordan around 30 minutes and nothing, quote, wacky out there, end quote, like 40 minutes. Little did he know he'd play in excess of 40 minutes. Phil also said the Bulls went from, quote, have-nots to have-lots, end quote.
Yeah, that was cool.
With the return of Jordan to the lineup and talk that Chicago are instant title contenders. That was a really fascinating, albeit brief, chat between Marv and Phil. Bob Costas then spoke with Reggie Miller in a pre-recorded piece that was in the Pacers locker room pre-game, and Reggie said it was tough to sleep the night before, but he was excited to play Jordan in a national TV game. Miller said Jordan is still the greatest player in the NBA, which I found quite fascinating, to avoid saying interesting. They briefly cut back to Hannah Storm in New York, and the graphics on the screen back in New York said Showtime. However, it wasn't actually classed as a Showtime episode, I'm thinking, as a pre-game lead-in to the game itself. So for what it's worth, I found that little bit of minutia quite, dare I say, interesting.
Very.
They also briefly crossed to Tom Hammond and Bill Walton, who were calling the game at Charlotte, the Jazz Hornets game. And I almost felt bad for Tom Hammond and Bill Walton being associated with that telecast.
Yeah.
knowing that in Indianapolis, everything was going down with the return of Jordan. So it was a bit of an anticlimactic commentary gig for them, I would have thought, on that day.
Tom Hammond, one of the great voices to call NBA games, in my opinion.
Yeah, underrated too, underrated.
Yeah.
That leads us into where they cross back to Market Square Arena and there was an a cappella version of the national anthem. And if this doesn't get you fired up, nothing will. It was by a band called Promise. Did you listen to it or did you just skip through it?
Skip through it.
You absolute cretin. It was awesome.
Oh, say does that star spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave.
It was a very good rendition. Like, you rightly so called me a cretin for not having having watched it. It's a very, very goosebump-inducing rendition. The team lineups were then introduced by Indiana Pacers PA guy Reb Porter. The Bulls started Scottie Pippen, Tony Kukoc, Will Perdue, B.J. Armstrong, and...
At the other guard, 6'6 from North Carolina, number 45, Michael Jordan. The head coach, Phil Jackson, the Chicago Bulls.
I would love to have known what was said in that huddle after they were introduced. At least Perdue and Jordan had smiles on their faces as they returned to the bench. The Pacers started Dale Davis, Derek McKee, Rick Smits, Mark Action Jackson, and Reginald Wayne Miller.
There we go. There's our first read the entire name out. Well done.
Matt Gukas and the man who called Jordan's last game before his retirement, Mal Valbert, were on the call 636 days ago, according to Marvelous, and the trivia buffs were advised that Ed Neely was the last Bull ever to wear 45. Dare I say it, friend of the show, Ed Neely.
That's right. Absolute extravaganza.
As I mentioned before, Gukas added that he had goosebumps, and this game was very, very special, even compared to some of the big occasions in the NBA calendar.
Couldn't agree more. At this stage, watching it back, I was just absolutely beside myself. It was fantastic, and the goosebumps were in full effect. Now, I just want to quickly add, for some reason, I had to go to timeanddate.com. I was compelled to check it out. I kept in June 20, 1993 to March 19, 1995, and the result was 638 days.
Wow.
I'm not doubting Marv, but my OCD-type tendencies led me to check it, and it said 638 days for what it's worth. Make of that what you will.
Well, I'm not sure if Marv should apologize to me or Marv's numbers guys should apologize to him.
I also don't want to doubt Elliot Kalb, Mr. Stats.
Mm.
Don't want to get him offside either, so I could be off. I might even just edit all that out, actually.
Into the first term, the first possession was perfect. Indiana won the tip, and Scottie Pippen got a hand on Rick Smith's dribble in the post, and the steal ended up in MJ's hands.
Yeah, what an awesome start, hey? Fortuitous to get his hands on the ball that quickly and come out with a steal too.
Gukas added that Jordan looked lightning quick, and Marv said Jordan, though not in outstanding basketball shape, does have fresh legs from his layoff. A scramble possession ended in Jordan having to beat the shot clock with his first attempt. He got Jackson and Miller off their feet beautifully on a pump fake but caught the back of the rim on the 17-footer. He also got the game's second attempt on a signature fadeaway with the smaller Action Jackson on him but missed it from about the foul line.
Yeah, that second shot was a much better look. The first shot, unfortunately, he was in a position where he found himself in many times pre-retirement where the Bulls would hand in the ball with like 3 seconds left on the shot clock. And during this game as well, there was numerous instances where Jordan ended up with the ball with the shot clock running down. And that also played some part in the fact that he had quite a horrendous field goal percentage by the time this game was all said and done.
Beautiful pump fake though.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah.
Rick Smits made the game's first basket off a Dale Davis offensive rebound, a short 10-foot jump shot from straight ahead. The Bulls missed their first six shots of the game, and Matty Gugas made the comment that they looked tight. Mind you, this was no chump Pacers team that they were playing. They had just won 5 of 6 on a West Coast road swing and led the Central at 39-24 going into this game, which had been a sellout for 2 weeks before Jordan's announcements. So just some information that the listener has now gotten twice.
The strange part was, once Jordan had announced his return at Indiana, the game had been sold out for 4 weeks. So work that out.
Extraordinary.
That doesn't make any sense. That's just stupid. I'll just get rid of that altogether.
Scotty finally scored the Bulls' first basket, a sweet give and go with Will Perdue, finishing in a Scotty and one floater on the baseline over two Pacer defenders. This was with 8:30 left in the first term, and the score was 9-2 Indiana. Shortly after this, MJ went to 0-for-3 from the field on another missed fadeaway. Now, I mentioned earlier that I enjoyed Marv's comment on the Bulls having trouble retrieving the basketball and their lack of a quality power forward. This was evident in the opening term as Scotty spent time trying to keep Dale Davis off the glass. Davis had 5 rebounds halfway through the first quarter. Scotty was also having an issue of his own with his jumper, as an airball 3 had Chicago at 1-for-10 shooting. His previous 3-attempt from the elbow hit nothing but backboard as he overshot the rim in one of those missed shots that can easily hit a guy in the head if the rebounders aren't paying attention.
Yeah, it was a really brutal start. Not only was Jordan ST ruggling on his jump shot, the team were stinking it up, and they just looked out of sorts for a majority of their sets in the first half.
MJ then went to 0-for-4 on an elbow 20-footer, then 0-for-5 on a pretty driving layup that was blocked by Smits. The Bulls recovered on the play with a BJ Armstrong 3 and a 13-5 Pacer lead. The first substitution of the game took place with about 5 minutes to go. Second-year man and a friend of the show, Corey Blunt, checked in for Tony Kukoc. Marv then commented that scalpers were able to get $1,000 for courtside seats to this game and $400 to $500 for nosebleeds, which I think makes the other courtside seats seem like pretty good value.
They would have cleaned up massively with some of the tickets that were getting sold hours before the game, I'm sure.
The Bulls drew it back to 17-9 on a big Pippen dunk from a nice Jordan feed. Soon after, Jordan checked out for Air Pete Myers with 2:59 left, and Indy up 20-9. MJ's stat line to this point, 0-for-5 from the field, 0 points, 1 steal, and 1 assist. The Bulls had been playing very well as a team of late and were 9-4 in their last 13 games. Marv added that Pete Myers understood MJ replacing him in the starting lineup. Ron Harper checked in late in the first quarter for Blunt. Gukas said that Harper had been making better contributions of late. Now, you, myself, and a friend of the show, Todd Spear, spoke about Harp's role on this team recently. Harp had gone from a 20 points per game scorer for the Clippers to a bit player on this 94-95 Bulls team. He started every game for the Bulls this season up to January 20 when Pete Myers replaced him. He would then, of course, start alongside MJ for the next 3 NBA championship seasons.
I don't want to say interesting, but it's an interesting moment in time in what actually happened between the time where he stopped being the starter in January to then when he would be the starter for those following 3 seasons alongside MJ. So hopefully, because he has said that he will guest on the show. I don't want to pressure Ronnie Harp, and I'm sure he's not listening, but if you are, Ron, we might chat about that should the opportunity arise.
As I mentioned, he started a large portion of this 94-95 season, and it almost seemed like he was in the doghouse after that point in time. And then to go from that to starting on 3 straight title teams, would love to know what happened.
Yeah, and I wonder how much say Jordan had about making that happen.
Yeah.
Obviously, Petey was shipped out of town, and the rest is history, I guess.
The Bulls' previous game to this one in Indiana was an 87-86 win over Milwaukee in Chicago. Scottie Pippen won the game off a flying dunk, 3-point play. Pippen's stat line, a measly 43 minutes, 27 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, and 8 steals, if you don't mind.
That's crazy, isn't it? 8 steals as well. Man.
Yeah.
He was doing everything for the Bulls. Of course, 1994 was a MVP contender and was obviously having some strong games throughout 95 pre-Jordan.
At the end of the first quarter in Indianapolis, it was 21-15 to the Pacers. The Bulls shot just 5 for 19 in the term, and Indiana asserted their dominance on the smaller Bulls with a 16-6 rebound advantage. Dale Davis with 7 himself. The Bulls opened the second period with Pippen, Armstrong, friend of the show Blunt, friend of the show Longley, and Pete Myers on the floor. Indiana had veteran Byron Scott, Rick Smits, Derek McKee, Dwayne Farrell, and 1984 gold medalist Vern Fleming on the floor.
Oh, that's great how you're throwing that in out of nowhere.
Scottie Pippen opened the Bulls scoring with an 18-footer, and Jordan punching bag Steve Kerr checked in early in the term for Benjamin Roy Armstrong Jr. And Jordan was back soon after with 9:40 remaining in the second term. The score got to 29-21 Indy before Phil Jackson called a timeout. Guka said that Phil was unhappy with the Bulls' play, and Marv pointed out that MJ was on the floor with four guys he never played with before, in Kerr, Longley, Blunt, and Kukoc. Marv also shortly after this pointed out that the NBA logo was on the back of Jordan's shorts, suggesting maybe that he had them on backwards. Adam?
It certainly looks like he had them on backwards, but I can categorically say that is false. I did a bit of research many years ago when this was first pointed out, and it was just an internet rumor that keeps getting regurgitated every few years. It'll pop up out of nowhere. Jordan had his shorts on backwards. Well, no, he didn't. Post-game, he was asked about that. No, Jordan said post-game, cringing at the possibility. Really? However, it was revealed in the days following, courtesy of the Bulls equipment manager, John Ligmanowski, a.k.a. Liggs. He said that the NBA logo was sewn incorrectly onto the back of Jordan's shorts. So he had the shorts on correctly, but the logo was sewn onto the back, so he wore them the right way around. But internet rumor squashed.
Myth busted.
Myth busted, exactly right.
We should coin that catchphrase.
We should. Actually, it'd probably make a good TV show.
During the second term, outside of Pippen and BJ, the Bulls were shooting a combined 1-for-14. Australia's own and friend of the show, Luke Longley, put up his second wild shot, adding to the poor shooting clip. This led to a Smits jumper and a 33-21 Indy lead. Shortly after, MJ was sent to the line and missed his first attempt, putting him at 0-for-6 from the field and 0-for-1 from the line. He then put his first comeback point on the board by making the second free throw. Matt Guekas mentioned another issue that the Bulls had in trying to put points on the board. The team was averaging only 25 free throw attempts per game, making 18 of them. I then, of course, went to basketballreference.com to check the accuracy of Matt's claim, and as it turns out, the Bulls finished that season 12th in free throw attempts, which actually wasn't that bad, I guess.
You had to clarify to make sure he wasn't spinning yarns.
And shortly after, Guekas complimented Will Vanderbilt on being one of the NBA's best in rebounds per minute. The Great Basketball Reference shows that Big Will finished the season ranked 6th at season's end, ahead of the likes of Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal on rebounds per minute. We all know, or those of us who were paying attention, that when he went to San Antonio, that he was a real hoover on the boards, wasn't he, Purdue?
He sucked big time.
Really strong. Had some really strong rebounding numbers as a San Antonio Spur.
Now, he did indeed, and would later form the Triple Towers, I think they were called. David Robinson, Tim Duncan, and Will Purdue. And played very well as the so-called Triple Towers back in 1998, I think it was, when Duncan was a rook.
All three played on the court at the same time.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Robinson, Duncan, and Purdue.
I imagine watching that. Now, after all this talk about Will Purdue's great rebounding exploits in this 95 season, there was a sequence in which the Bulls gave up multiple offensive rebounds and loose balls at the Pacers' end, which resulted in a Derek McKee score. Now, even I got frustrated watching this. They just could not grab a loose ball. And a Reggie Miller three gave the Pacers an 18-point lead soon after, and the Pacer crowd was loud. The Pacers were on a 15-3 run in the last 5:34 since Michael Jordan had returned to the game.
I'll have a few more stats come halftime about the impact of Jordan on and off the court.
Out of the timeout, Michael finally found the range on his first field goal with 4:06 remaining in the second term.
Jordan still looking for his first field goal, and there it is! Michael Jordan, after missing his first six shots.
Marv asked Gukas a little later on how Michael would benefit from the new hand-checking rules that had been introduced while he was playing baseball. Gukas said that Pacers coach Larry Brown said Jordan would have averaged 50 per game if they'd have introduced it when he had begun his career. And Ahmad added that Jordan said he was more concerned about his own defense and making the adjustment himself, which was a good point.
Yeah.
Two free throws gave Michael points 4 and 5, bringing the Pacer lead back to 11 at 43-32 with 1:55 remaining in the half. Air Petey was fouled shortly after and sent to the free throw line. Matt Gukas said that he had asked Myers about the way Jordan used to kill him in practice when he was first signed by the Bulls back in the 80s, and if anything had changed over the past few days before this game. Myers added a very sweet tidbit that they had actually been competing for Jordan's old locker at the Birdo Center that Myers had taken over after Jordan retired, and Michael wanted it back.
Oh, that is so good.
They competed for his old locker.
I love finding out stuff like this.
Needless to say, Myers had to find a new locker.
How good is that?
Yeah.
Mm. I didn't even pick that up in the commentary. Clearly, I was just taking notes and not even listening. That's fantastic.
Michael soon hit his second straight field goal by taking Miller off the dribble and pulling up at the foul line. Tony Kukoc also hit his first field goal with just over 40 seconds remaining after Marv had pointed out how quiet he had been after productive games in the lead-up to this one. The Bulls pressed the Pacers on their last possession of the half, leading to a Vern Fleming turnover. Gukas said that John Bark, who was now an assistant with the Charlotte Hornets, would have been proud of the press that he called unleashing the Dobermans in his time in Chicago.
I love that. And coincidentally, the Hornets playing on the same day, of course, but Johnny Bark no longer part of the team at that stage.
Dale Davis finished the first half with a lowly 15 rebounds to point out the Bulls' rebounding deficiencies. Jordan shot just 2 for 9 in the half for 7 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist and 1 steal in 19 minutes. And the score was Indy by 10, 47-37. For the first half, Chicago shot 11 for 33 from the field at 33%. And the Pacers 17 for 39 at 44%.
We go back to the Prudential Halftime Report back in New York. Hannah Storm is there with the doctor, Julius Erving. They throw back to Bob Costas, who has an interview with John Paxson. They're both in Indiana, recently retired John Paxson. Now, Paxson compared Jordan's first half to when Jordan came back from his broken foot near the end of the 1986 regular season. So I thought that was worth making mention of because, of course, Johnny Pax was a part of the team at that time.
Although there was no 7 minutes per half in this game.
No minutes restriction. Then I went back to Hannah Storm, who threw to an interview that Jim Gray did with Charles Barkley that was recorded the night before in terms of Jordan reaching the levels that he had achieved in 1993.
Let's hear from one of Michael's best friends, Charles Barkley, who spoke with our Jim Gray last night.
Do you feel as though Michael can come back right now and perform at the level that he was?
In the beginning, he might have a big adrenaline rush, and he's going to play well. But as far as reaching the level he reached a few years ago, that's impossible. You know, I don't think anybody can ever attain something 2 years later that they had. That's impossible.
They go back to the studio where Dr. J offers his diagnosis on Jordan's first half, and he admitted that he was very surprised MJ did come back. A week earlier, Doc was chatting with, I think, Peter Vesey and Hannah Storm on another Game of the Week telecast, and he said that Jordan would not come back to the NBA. So that was quite notable, I would have thought. Now, quickly, in terms of stats, Indiana out-rebounded Chicago 30-13. As you mentioned, Dale Davis had a lowly 15 rebounds in the first half. The Bulls had 13 total as a team. Mm. And for the Bulls, Jordan had 7 points at the half. Scottie Pippen led the Bulls with 13 points. BJ Armstrong had 11, and Pete Myers had 3 points and no lockers. For Indiana, Reggie Miller had 15 points. Rick was giving Chicago the Smiths with 8 points. McKee had 8 points and Dale Davis had 7. The Chicago Tribune the following day, of course they wouldn't report it on the day because it hadn't come out yet, reported that with MJ on the floor in the first half, Indiana outscored Chicago 41-25. And with Jordan sitting, they trailed the Bulls 12-6. Quite an interesting little turn of events there with Jordan on and off the floor.
Interesting.
Interesting. Interesting indeed.
just for the sake of not doing your own head in, you can get out a thesaurus and look up the word interesting and start using some different words. They mean the same thing, but the fact of the matter is all this stuff is just interesting.
It is interesting. So much so that I did look up synonyms for interesting. Later in this conversation, you'll probably hear me say thought-provoking, because that was one of the synonyms for interesting.
Wow.
Now, moving on to the third term, mate. Marv brought up a thought-provoking stat as the second half opened. That was quick.
Wow. I reach, you teach.
As the second half opened. Now, to that point, Jordan had scored at least 10 or more points in 666 of his 667 career games. The only single-digit finish was on March the 22nd, my dad's birthday, in 1986 at Cleveland. Hello to Dad if you're listening. Jordan had 8 points in that particular game, but for some context, Jordan was only in his fifth game back from the aforementioned broken foot. It was a 26-point loss to Cleveland, and he was on restricted minutes, playing 16 for the entire game. The third quarter opened with a, quote, comical sequence, end quote, according to Marv. Jordan drove strong to the hoop and dished off to an unsuspecting Will Perdue under the bucket. Will wasn't looking for the pass, and that led to a transition break for the Pacers. Action Jackson passed down court to Reggie Miller, who had his back turned. The ball bounced off Reggie's head and out of bounds. And then the Bulls immediately turned it over again just seconds later. So not the greatest start there to the quarter from either team. Still inside the first minute of the third period, Smits hit a 15-foot baseline jumper, and that gave him 10 points on the night, and the Pacers extended their lead to 49-37. Now, with just under 2 minutes gone, Pippen hit a three from near the top of the key. It was his first long-range make of the day, and it gave him 16 points. Shortly after, Chicago cut the lead to single digits, 50-42, courtesy of a BJ Armstrong 11-footer. Now, after some great defensive pressure, we get to Jordan's most memorable moment from this game, arguably. First, he stripped Smits from behind, setting up a 3-on-2 break for the Bulls. MJ drove straight down the lane and laid it in at the bucket after jumping from inside the dotted line.
The steal, and then the drive for the bucket.
That play was negated immediately by a quick inbounds pass from Action Jackson to Derek McKee, who scored a layup at the other end. Now, not long after this, Pippen fouled Reggie at the rim and gave Miller some extracurricular treatment as he shoved Reggie to the floor. Did you notice that? The crowd got a bit fired up too.
Well, yeah, they replayed it, so of course I noticed it.
Well, I didn't listen to some of the commentary, clearly, because I didn't hear that Pete Myers tidbit. So,
in the interest of watching the entire game, I did utilize the plus 10-second button on YouTube to a great effect in the fourth quarter. So, I guess there's every chance that I could have missed it, but no, I didn't.
So, that earned Pip a technical foul, and according to my notes here, a cacophony of boos. I'm not sure why I used cacophony, but there you go.
Mm.
A cacophony of... A cacophony of boos from the Market Square Arena faithful. Now, Miller converted the technical free throw and one of the two free throws from the original foul, and the Pacers were out again by 10. A couple of wild shots from the Bulls led to another easy two for Mark Jackson. Phil Jackson was forced to call a timeout, and that's something he often would try to avoid as much as possible when the Bulls were struggling. But he had to settle the team down, and the Pacers were back out to a 12-point lead with just under 8 minutes left in the third. On the resumption of play, Jordan made a pretty left-hand spin move at the hoop, and Dale Davis was called for the goaltend. So that brought Jordan into double figures, 11 points on 4 of 13 from the field. A few plays later, MJ drove strong to the hoop but missed the lefty lay-in. He is still trying to find his range from all distances.
Even MJ's misses are pretty.
Oh, it was beautiful. Like, he went to the left a couple of times in this game.
Yeah.
Was not shy at all in showing the left hand. Later, Derek McKee, defended by Jordan, hit a tough 13-footer over MJ and built the Pacers' lead up to 15 points. Rick Smits picked up his fourth foul shortly thereafter, and that stop in play saw Pete Myers replace Jordan on the floor. MJ sat with 11 points, 2 boards, 2 assists, and 2 steals on 4 of 14 shooting. And the Pacers had hit 6 out of 7 in the quarter, so they were on fire, and the Bulls were 5 of 10, which is quite handy given their slow start to the first half. Now, after a terrible set on the resumption of play, Pippen passed to Tony Kukoc with 2 seconds left on the shot clock. The waiter dished up a perfect swish, his first 3 of the game, And did you hear the quick conversation between Marv and Matt that were touching on Kukoc's disappointment about not playing with Jordan when Tony had first joined the Bulls, obviously with MJ's unforeseen retirement soon to occur?
They also mentioned that Jordan said that he was surprised at how emotional the Tony was.
Yeah, it's interesting because, there we go, it was thought-provoking because going back to the 92 Olympics, obviously the only time that Jordan played against Kukoc prior to them being teammates, you got to wonder how much that impact had on Tony, because Pippen and Jordan tried to eviscerate Kukoc and Croatia during those games.
Interesting.
Thought-provoking. A few players later, off the missed BJ Armstrong drive, friend of the show, Bill Wennington, soared in for the one-hand put-back jam.
Armstrong beating Jackson with the dribble, and it's Wennington with the slam.
Bill does that about four or five times a year. When he does it in either old Chicago Stadium, which is no longer, or the new United Center, the crowd goes wild.
The Pacers still held on to a 12-point lead, and with just over 3 minutes left in the third, Reggie Miller went to the bench with 21 points on 5 of 11 shooting and 3 of 8 from downtown, and MJ returned to the court, and Indiana were up 69-56. Now, with the break in play, there was a startling graphic on screen. Only BJ Armstrong, Jordan, Pippen, and Perdue remained from the Bulls' 1993 NBA championship team. Gone were John Paxson, retired, Scott Williams to the 76ers, Trent Tucker, retired, Stacey King to the Timberwolves, Bill Cartwright to the Sonics, and I looked at Basketball Reference just today. He played only two more games with Seattle before retiring at the end of the season. Horace Grant, of course, signed with the Magic. Rodney McRae have retired, and Daryl the Pedestrian Walker had also retired. Corey Williams was not an active member on the Bulls roster, but he obviously was there during the NBA Finals.
He didn't make the playoff roster. In regards to playoff rosters, when talking about Will Perdue's turnaround in his play and his output for the Bulls, they mentioned that he actually missed the playoff roster the previous year in 1994. So it was definitely a good turnaround in play from Will Vanderbilt, Will Perdue.
Less than 2 minutes left in the quarter, Jordan drove to the bucket, dished off a gorgeous pass to Kukoc for the easy two. That reduced the Bulls' deficit to 9. And speaking of gorgeous, the quarter ends with a beautiful Jordan to Wennington pass under the hoop. Big Billy slammed it home with less than 2 seconds left. Signs of things to come. Jordan to Wennington. Think New York and the double nickel.
Mm.
The Bulls trailed by 10, 73-63 after three quarters, and Jordan had 11 points, 2 boards, 4 assists, and 2 steals on 4 of 15 shooting.
You mentioned the upcoming game versus New York. Billy has famously pointed out that himself and Jordan combined for 57 points in that game.
Which is hilarious. I love that. Now, getting to the fourth quarter, mate, the great man, Lucien Longley, opened up the scoring for the Bulls, and he hit a sweeping left-handed hook in the lane, and Chicago were only down by 8 points. Only a few plays later, after another loss of communication led to a Bulls turnover, Byron Scott hit a baseline jumper to extend the Pacers' lead to 14. So things are looking quite grim at that stage, 79-65. Shortly thereafter, Jordan converted 2 free throws after grabbing an offensive rebound on the back of another poorly run offensive set from the Bulls. And moments later, Jordan came up short on 2 shots near the hoop. And this led to a sliding doors moment that led to an open 3-point attempt for Reggie Miller at the other end. The shot rimmed out, and Matt Gukas said Reggie was, quote, going for the kill, end quote, as the Pacers were up by 14 at the time. That almost could have closed the door.
I think there were several times where Reggie put up and missed 3-point attempts that, as Matt said, he was definitely going for the kill and trying to put the balls away.
Less than 8 minutes left in the game, Chicago was down 16 points before a wide-open Steve Kerr 3 brought Chicago back to within 13 at 83-70. And in short succession, with Jordan asking out of the game to rest, which is a rarity in itself, Pippen hit a 3, reducing the margin to 10 points, and seconds later, Reggie did hit what would be his 4th tray of the game, giving him 24 points to that stage, again giving the Pacers that 13-point buffer. Realizing Smits was in foul trouble, Luke Longley hit a pretty layup on the following play. It was actually a gorgeous move we talked about before we started recording today, a beautiful up and under on the right-hand side of the basket. And minutes later, Longley was the beneficiary of a Jordan entry pass down low after Derek McKee failed to bite on one of MJ's long-range pump fakes. Now, Indiana were up 86-77 with less than 5 minutes to go in the game. And after another defensive stop, the Bulls' great defense kept them in the game in the second half, it must be said. Pippen scored an easy two in transition, and it was just a seven-point game. Just as quickly, Miller then hit a long two, giving him 26 points, and extended the lead further. On the next play, Jordan hit a 10-footer off glass, 15 points for MJ. The Bulls weren't going away.
I also mentioned before we started recording today that Jordan only hit seven shots in this game, one of which was a goaltend, so he actually only hit six shots himself. I'd forgotten, I think, four out of those six shots and how he made them. I'd particularly forgotten about this 10-footer off the glass, which was quite a nice move.
Yeah, it was thought-provoking. Now, less than 3 minutes left in regulation. Following the offensive board, friend of the show Corey Blunt dished out a very quick pass to an open BJ Armstrong, who drilled a long two, initially looked to be a three-pointer, in front of the Pacers bench, and that reduced the Bulls' deficit to five. It was 88-83, and Indiana called for time. There was 2 minutes and 44 seconds left, and after the ad break, the replay of BJ's shot did show that he had his toe on the line. Now, down by as many as 16 points in the fourth, the Bulls were on a 16-5 run over the previous 5 minutes and 20 seconds and were right back in the game. For Indiana, Derek hit a McKee bucket to extend the lead to 7 points. Had to work it in there somehow. Before Longley and Blunt each split a pair of free throws. So, with 1 minute and 30 seconds left in regulation, Indiana were up 90-85. Off the BJ Armstrong steal, Pippen scored on a tough fast break lay-in, and all of a sudden it's a three-point game, 90-87 with just over a minute left. Ever the opportunist, Reggie Miller tipped in a Smith's miss, gave Reggie 28 points, and the lead was back to five. Now, 20 seconds later, Pippen drilled a long two, and again the margin was just 3 points. McKee missed on a long forced jumper. Corey Blunt corralled the rebound and handed off to MJ, and Chicago had a chance to cut it to one or tie with a three-pointer. 28 seconds left. Jordan dribbled down court and found Pippen open on the other side of the floor.
A pick set by Longley. There's Pippen for Pippen. Yes! The Bulls have come from 18 down, and the game is tied at 92. 19 seconds left in the fourth quarter.
What a moment.
What a moment indeed. And it was all bottom on the shot too. Scotty hit nothing but net. And I know that it took a certain amount of minutes for the Bulls to reel in the Indiana lead, but it felt like they came back in about 30 seconds, a flurry of points at the end.
Just capped by that three-pointer, and his celebration after the shot was great, just raising both hands to the sky. And at that point, Indiana resisted calling a timeout. They inbounded the ball, at which point the crowd stood collectively as one and were just going absolutely bonkers as the game was coming to its conclusion, or so we thought. This actually led to one of the most unusual moments of Jordan's career.
Down to five, sets up Miller, and a foul on Jordan. Michael did not want to make the contact. Both Jordan and Miller are shaken up.
First of the final 2 minutes on Chicago.
The Bulls have that foul to give, so Miller will not go to the line. 3 seconds remaining in this fourth quarter. And both Michael Jordan and Reggie Miller are obviously hurting.
Miller and him were both sprawled on the floor, and chaos reigned supreme, I guess you could say.
Reggie was about to fire up a three, and if he had have gone through with the other shooting motion, he would have ended up at the line. But the Bulls actually had a foul to give, which was a thought-provoking stat.
Miller wouldn't re-enter the game to close out regulation, and it was thought he was actually done for the game, as per Marv a few minutes later, but we'll get to that. Jordan was suffering from cramp, it was then said, courtesy of Ahmad Rashad when they got back from the break, but he did remain in the game on the inbounds play. They then called a 20-second timeout, the Pacers that is, and Derek McKee was unable to hit the would-be game winner, so we go to overtime with scores tied at 92.
We talk about paying attention to what the commentary was saying. I actually missed that bit that Jordan was suffering from cramp, as reported by Ahmad coming out of the timeout. I actually thought that Jordan's knee had clipped Reggie's knee, and that's what caused MJ a bit of discomfort.
Yeah, that's what it looked like.
As we head to overtime, and the word on Reggie Miller, Ahmad Rashad passing on to us that he is through
for the game, suffering a right thigh contusion. And apparently Michael Jordan is all right. He is back on the floor in the fourth quarter, though, with Scottie Pippen with 12 of his 31, including a couple of big threes down the stretch to send this game into overtime.
Well, let's get into overtime and chat about what happened in the extra period, mate. A bit of free basketball.
The Pacers started the OT period without original Wayne Miller after the collision with Jordan late in the fourth period that left Reggie hobbling to the locker room. Neither team had scored a minute into the OT period when Jordan missed a wing three-pointer to beat the shot clock. Shortly after, he tied the game at 94 with 3:15 to go with a 20-footer from straight ahead. In an effort to keep Dale Davis off the boards, there is no question that the Bulls made a concerted effort to send extra red shirts to crash the boards, including Jordan himself. Did you notice that, Adam?
I did. Chicago were definitely trying to hit the glass hard in an effort there to try and ascertain the control of the game again.
With 1:30 to go, Jordan cut the lead to one by taking Byron Scott off the dribble and pulling up just inside the foul line for a jumper. MJ then went straight to the bench in a little discomfort with his left knee that I originally thought came from the collision with Reggie late in regulation, but apparently it was just cramp, Adam.
Yes, Ahmad had made mention of the fact that he found out via Jordan. I guess he obviously had a quick chat to him during the interim. It looked to be a lot worse at the time, obviously, when him and Reggie collided, but thankfully for Jordan, he was back in the game pretty soon.
After the timeout, Reggie Miller returned to the game to a huge applause from the home crowd.
Indiana 2 of 6 from the field and overtime. Here comes Reggie Miller. So Reggie Miller, who appeared to be through for the rest of the game, is limping his way back out of the court.
Reggie limped his way back onto the court, which was followed by a Mark Action Jackson 18-footer with just over 1 minute to go. Now, I'm sure that the knock to Reggie's knee hurt, but he was hobbling around like he had been shot.
He's always one for drama, Reggie.
Mm.
Time and time again, he proved he was obviously worthy of doing that. But yeah, I guess the theatre of the moment probably got to him a bit as well.
The Pacers' Byron Scott put the finishing touches on the game by drawing a three-point play on an acrobatic finish. The play fouled Luke Longley out of the game. Byron completed the three-point play for a six-point Indiana lead with just under 30 seconds remaining. Up to this point, Jordan had played 44 of a possible 53 minutes in his first game in 21 months. Needless to say, he must have been telling Phil that he was feeling pretty good.
I can't imagine Jordan asking for out of the game again. Earlier in the first half, he did ask to sit out. Given the competitor he was, there was no way he was going to just sit out towards the end of OT. But certainly he would have been feeling that, mate, on the way back to Chi-Town.
Jordan missed 2 3-point attempts late in the game before a Bulls foul with 7 seconds to go. The Bulls shot just 2 for 13 in the overtime period.
That will do it. The Bulls were outscored 11-4 in the overtime period. And the final score, Indiana 103 to the Bulls 96. Scottie Pippen was the game's high scorer. He had 31 points. Jordan had 19 points, but importantly, 6 boards, 6 assists, 3 steals. BJ Armstrong had 15 points. And then we had Kukoc and Longley with 7 points apiece. For the Pacers, Reggie had 28 points and 4 assists. He went 4 of 12 from downtown. Next was Byron Scott, had 17 points. Derek McKee had 16 points, and Rick Smits had 12 points and 9 boards. Dale Davis, as we mentioned before, had a monster game with 20 rebounds, 8 on the offensive boards, and 9 points to go along with that. The Pacers improved to 40-24 on the season, and the Bulls dropped to 34-32.
Outside of Scotty and BJ, as we mentioned earlier on, the Bulls shot terribly in this game. I guess it wasn't helped with Jordan's astro field goal attempts, as Johnny Kerr used to say. It didn't help that MJ himself got up an inordinate amount of shots.
He was launching with reckless abandon. He was trying to shoot himself into form, I guess.
He was.
Post-game, Jordan front of the media for about 20 or so minutes. Anything of note particularly stand out to you from that period of time there, mate, where he's getting grilled by the press?
Immediately, his suit jacket stood out. It looked like it had been put together from a Scotsman's kilt.
He was always a fashionista, wasn't he, MJ? Still is to this day. He divides a lot of people there with his fashion sense.
Hashtag double denim.
That's right. That was the night news of his impending retirement broke at the MLB game there, and he was forced to head to the exits before the game even ended.
Yeah, he threw at the ceremonial pitch at Comiskey Park.
He did too, the old double denim, eh? Glorious. Reporters were all but hanging from the ceiling as MJ was peppered with a wide array of questions about his comeback and the impact that would have on the NBA. He was quizzed on numerous topics, including his thoughts on the respective massive rise in the stock values of some of the major companies that he endorsed, Nike particularly. He was quick to shoot down those huge windfalls, though, because he was stressing that this time he was back purely for the love of the game.
You know, there's nothing under the table. I wish there were, but it isn't. You know, so I'm strictly back for the love of the game and no added money. You know, I didn't have any stipulations in terms of, you know, Scotty's got to be here, or Scotty's got to get a new contract, or BJ or Phil. I asked for my own, you know, knowledge, you know, but I didn't request at all.
Also, Jordan talked about his return to the game as an opportunity for him to protect the integrity of the game. Something that he felt that the next breed of young players in the NBA weren't doing in a responsible manner. So I found that to be quite a thought-provoking take. And he also said that if Julius Erving, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, who had helped pave the way for the success of these upcoming breed of players, if they could return from retirement, he is sure they would have. Of course, Magic did come back less than a year later.
Yeah, Michael was definitely at his charming best during this press conference. He had his press conference game face on, definitely. You have to agree.
Yeah.
He also added that when asked the question, he believed that the NBA championship was not too big of an expectation for the Bulls for this 94-95 season after his return.
He also actually opened up and said he was quite embarrassed at all the attention that the talk of this possible comeback leading to that particular game and all the hoopla that surrounded it in terms of the his return to the NBA and, of course, the impact it had on his Bulls teammates as well. He said it was quite embarrassing. In terms of whether or not he'd sign another contract to continue playing in the NBA once his existing deal ended.
Never say never.
Which, of course, was a great little tip of the hat to his 1993 retirement press conference as well, where, of course, he said that he was all but done and ended up coming back. And just another thing I noted from that press conference, Michael briefly mentioned how difficult it was for him to get off the plane when he landed on the morning of the game, knowing that it would be the first time that he'd be on the court without his father's presence, either in the stands or at least being there with him. So that was quite telling too.
At the end of the press conference, WGN's Dan Roan said that MJ was wrapping up his press conference where they actually cut off the end of his answer to the last question of the press conference. So it was actually Dan himself who was wrapping it up for MJ, I would have thought.
Wasn't it just a circus inside that room? At one stage, it was clips from a CNN coverage. Then it went to the WGN news coverage. The room was almost spilling with reporters.
Yeah, there was a lot of people in there.
Mm. Hopefully you enjoyed that, mate, as much as I did recording it. It was fantastic. Until we talk again on either a future episode of NB88, which we're currently recording, or just another In All NS episode. Thanks again for being a part of the show.
It's been a pleasure for you.
Thanks for listening. I welcome your interaction with the show. You can suggest topics or guests you want to hear conversations with. Leave a voicemail. Simply visit inallns.com/voice. Click start recording, leave your message, and press stop. You can even listen back before submitting. Press send and you're done. Time now to share another great review from a fan of the show. Thanks this time to Doc Krug on Apple Podcasts Australia. And it's a 5-star review too. Thank you, Doc. It's titled Best B-Ball Podcast and it reads, Adam's depth of knowledge, research and geeky fandom is unrivaled, making this a must-listen podcast for all of us reliving our favourite past games and players and behind-the-scenes experts that make this the greatest game of all. Thanks, Doc. That is much appreciated, mate. Worldwide, the show now has 103 ratings on Apple Podcasts, with an average of 4.5 stars. Thanks for your continued support. If you add a review, I'd love to read it out on a future episode. Your ratings and reviews are one of the best ways to support the podcast. If you enjoy the show, please do tell your basketball-loving friends about it. Your word-of-mouth recommendations are truly worth their weight in gold. You can subscribe to my show in various ways, Search for In All Airness, three words, on your podcast app of choice. The show is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Android, Pocket Casts, and more. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show and share my web address with your friends and colleagues, inallairness.com. Check out the podcast archive for plenty more episodes with high-profile guests. Follow me on Twitter at InAllAirness. Please add your like to the show's social hub, facebook.com/InAllAirness. Join me next time for another edition of the show. Oh, dear.
But I'm more excited about the fact that this now applies. Dun, da, 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 da. Oh.
That's CBS, you idiot.
You idiot.
Oh, that's the first blooper. I've got a mental block of what the music is.
Da, 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 da. No, that's CBS.
How can we both completely forget the round ball rock? John Tesh is livid as we speak. Hang on, let me just quickly play something so I can...
Please.
Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Hello to John Boland, if you're listening. I'm sure he is. JB, how are you, mate? As if he can answer, but how are you?
Because we are going live at the moment.
We are going live, exactly right. Live to your closet and live to my study. It certainly looks like he had them on backwards, but I can categorically say that is false.
Are you going to put that soundboard? Soundboard?
I'll put the soundboard in.
Are you going to put the soundboard in there?
Yeah, I will put the soundboard in there, yeah.